fingers on vibrate. I just slid it in my pants. Call me Kelly. Oh, crap. We're recording, aren't we?
Yeah, crashed the start.
Hey.
Right. Hello. And welcome to episode 2, or is it issue 2? Are we going to go episodes or issues?
Issue
2.
It's got to be issue.
Issue.
The difficult second issue. Obviously, never quite as valuable as issue 1, but still reasonably collectible.
With variant covers. One's a hologram. That's hard to get.
Yeah.
Always variant.
Because the marketing department were disappointed with the sales of issue 1, and they need to come up with some scheme to get the sales up and quick. So, same old as issue 1, myself, Andrew, Stevens, Dr. Happy Mac from the Mac show, hosting via the miracle of Skype audio, no video, and conference calling with Paul Kirkle in the UK.
Hello.
And
yeah,
Kelly Gamont, all the way from Portland.
Hey, everybody.
Excellent satellite delay there, Kelly. Mm. And Jeff Gamut, who is in Colorado.
Right. And I don't have nearly as much of a delay because I'm closer to you than Portland.
And the speed of light is not infinite.
That's right.
So, after last week's, which seemed to go quite well, we've all managed to assemble again for issue 2. Kelly had some issues that she wanted to discuss regarding probably the holy grail of graphic novels, Watchmen. Paul, I'm sure, has got stuff to add on to that. And we all can weigh in because it's contentious. It's a Marmite of a book, I guess. So I guess we can start with that.
That's a way to put it.
Watchmen, Dave Gibbons, Alan Moore. Go. Kelly, tell us what...
Well, here's the thing, is that I know a lot of people, like, I bought a more recent copy, so mine's not the old abused one that I used to have, which is kind of a bummer. But, like, right on the front, it says one of Time Magazine's 100 best novels. It was a winner of the Hugo Award. It's, like, kind of a big deal. It's one of those things that people who don't read comic books have read Watchmen. A lot of people who say, you know, oh, I don't read comics, like, they read this. And I think there are a lot of people for whom it is a very important title, whether it's from an art perspective, from a storytelling perspective, from a advancement of the genre perspective, you know, as people get snobby about this kind of stuff, I don't know. But to me, it seems like it's one of those ones that a lot of people know about and knew about even before the film was released. And I think that the film has divided a lot of people. I think comic nerds, like a whole lot of factions of nerds, whether it's technology nerds or anybody else, suffer from what my friends over at the Angry Mac Bastard podcast like to call Highlanderism, which is there can be only one correct opinion, and it is mine, and yours sucks. Hmm. Whatever yours is, it is invalid if it's different from mine. So I think that's something that a lot of people sort of thought about Watchmen. Like, Watchmen is mine, and I don't want to share it, and who's this yutz? Zack Snyder thinks he can make a movie out of Watchmen. And there are people who believe that he has done so with varying degrees of success. And I think, to continue to tie this back to the comic show, the reason this may... I think people's opinion of Watchmen is forming their opinion of Man of Steel, because he's involved with that as well. So... there's my two bits. I figured Watchmen's a big enough deal that maybe we should discuss it. As a book by itself, I liked it a lot. I did not read it when it first came out because I knew it was going to be a serial. And so I waited until it was finished and bound in a set. I know Jeff was saying earlier that he waited and or that he read each episode as it happened. And so for him, it was probably a very different experience.
It was a... probably a stunningly different experience. I found out about the series when issue 2 came out, so I bought the first and second issues at the same time. Mm-hmm. And sat down, read them, and was so captivated that I read them again, and then read them again. in the same sitting. And then pined away the weeks, because it was weeks between issues. And then as each issue would come out, I mean, I was at the comic book store on Wednesday to pick it up, grabbed it, and then would start from the beginning and read all the way through whatever the current issue was. And it was just an incredible experience. And after it was finished, and then they released it as a single bound thing, I immediately went and bought that so that I could preserve my comics that I had picked up one at a time, because I knew I would read this over and over, and I didn't want to lose my original comics. Not because I was thinking I can sell these for a lot of money someday, but because they had so much sentimental value to me by that point that I wanted to do everything I could to preserve them. And when I lost my bound edition, I went and bought another. When I gave that away to someone, I went and bought another. And if I had to give up all of my comics and was told I could keep only one, I would keep that bound edition of Watchmen so I could read that over and over. So I kind of like it a little, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You're sounding like a fan.
Yeah.
We'll put you down in the plus column.
Yeah.
Well, for the book.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm assuming we will share our opinions on the movie after we're done sharing our opinions on the book, and then I will tell you what I think of that.
Excellent. Paul?
What I will say about the book is that this book is one of the books that I spent like twice as long reading, because a lot of times I want to read because I want to know what happened, so I want to like get through it, and then I'll go back again and sort of take a better look around and that sort of thing. But this is one of the books that it took me twice as long to read, because on each page I would read all the stuff that was happening, and then I would go back and look at all the pictures and like the little bits of detail that were in, and like look at the layout of the page and how is this put together, and what's the art like, and like getting a feel for the characters. So that was one of the things to me that really struck me about reading it was when I read it, it took forever, you know, as a chunk of time, because I was spending as much time on the art as I was on the story. And a lot of times that balance is not 50-50. And like sometimes I'll spend more time looking at the art. Sometimes I'll spend a little less time looking at the art if I'm reading. So that to me was that's one of the notable things about Watchmen, is that it's as beautiful to look at with no words as it is if you're just reading the story. So now we'll see what Paul thinks of it.
Mm-hmm. You see, this is my problem. I can't bear the art in Watchmen. It really, really bugs me and irritates me. And the reason is the colorist who did Watchmen is a guy called John Higgins, and he's a very talented comic artist in his own right. And I want to live in the alternate universe where John Higgins drew Watchmen and Dave Gibbons colored it, because Dave Gibbons has always struck me as the archetypal epochal comic hack, and he's a draw for hire. And you know, this is harsh, and I know it, and to be honest, he's more successful than I'll ever be in anything, or certainly rich than I'll ever be in anything. But
yes, but he doesn't have this show, so you know, we've got
yeah
show.
But his artwork just
it's all your opinion
rigid. Yeah, I know, and I love Watchmen with a passion. It is the best comic story that I can think of, graphic story that I can think of, and yet the artwork just bores me silly.
Yeah, interesting. Dave Gibbons can be better than he is in Watchmen, and I think that he has been better in numerous. I mean, I think he was better in Rogue Trooper at the beginning.
Yeah, but there were always, everything that he's ever drawn, there's always been a better artist. I mean, he's not even the best artist on Watchmen, for crying out loud. John Higgins, he's the best artist on Watchmen. But on Rogue Trooper, Cam Kennedy was the best Rogue Trooper artist. I can't think of, whenever he drew Dredd, he was in the lower tier. of you know, he wasn't in the first tier of Dread artists. There's nothing that I can think of that he's ever drawn. Computer games. He did the, you know, Beneath a Steel Sky and whatever. They were okay, but they weren't anywhere near as beautiful or gorgeous to look at as LucasArts games. He's always been the hack artist that comes in and lends a cachet to something, but I've never understood why, because I've never seen the Dave Gibbons comic that I've got looked at and said, do you know what, that is good.
Yeah.
What do you think is the least bad, then?
Oh, blimey.
But, I mean, obviously, I mean, Watchmen is lucky because it has, you know, it's not just Dave Gibbons, and it is an Alan Moore
thing. Oh, it's Alan Moore. I mean, Watchmen is Alan Moore. And that's the other thing that irritates me, is that Dave Gibbons is the guy, the spokesperson for Watchmen, and yet Alan Moore is Watchmen. With no Alan Moore, there is no Watchmen.
But Alan Moore never comments particularly helpfully on anything after he's made it, does he?
Well, true, yeah. I mean, to be fair, there is that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of... I'm probably in the middle between Jeff and Paul, in that I didn't read it issue by issue, and I came to it just as I knew about it, and I kind of feel like I've always known about it, but I only read it as a collected thing, and that was after reading chunks of it in the local bookshop on the sly, because I'm not sure I actually want to buy this. And I mean, I love Alan Moore more than I like Dave Gibbons, but even so, having read it and reread it, it's weirdly, it's almost a complete meh to me. I don't think there's any of it that tugged at my heartstrings at all in terms of the writing. Or, I mean, it's not bad, it's a good comic, and it's certainly better than 99 or 98% of the stuff that's out there, but for some reason I didn't really read, and maybe I didn't digest it correctly, but I didn't get quite what Alan Moore was banging on about. And there was nothing in the artwork to lift it out of that for me. If John Higgins had drawn it, then you might have got a bit more dynamism. And I suspect, I mean, I know maybe that, and I've read that Gibbons was going for a very flat panel sort of retro look and things with the artwork, but it's just, for me, it's never gelled in my mind. And not to denigrate it in terms of plot and things, because it obviously is doing, you know, great things in terms of writing and plot and characterization, but you know, sometimes just on a personal level it just kind of goes over your head.
You know, maybe part of the reason I latched on to Watchmen just immediately and pretty much on a molecular level is because I was reading it as it came out, and it was very timely. And it and the social commentary that it offered was targeted at that window of time that we were living in, and so there was a lot to identify with that was happening all around me while I was reading these comics, and I just loved the way you'd get the social commentary that was happening between the characters in the story and in the world around them, and then it would jump to the pulp comic that the boy was reading at the newsstand, and then we'd get this completely different perspective on looking at the whole social commentary thing, and it was also commenting on the world that these characters are living in, and I really enjoyed that multi-layered thing that was going on there, and the fact that there was so much that you could look at and relate to what was happening in the world at that time, which may actually be a bad thing because that could date the story and eventually make it irrelevant because people can't relate to what's happening in the book anymore.
I don't know if it has dated, though. I mean, Watchmen...
I don't think it has dated at all. I think it's held up very well.
It's of its time. I think, for me, when I read it, like, I know exactly the slice of my life that is being depicted. You know, like, what was happening then, what I was seeing on TV, what life was like. I was not an adult when it came out, so I have a different perspective of that particular slice of time in the world, but... I know what was happening. I remember what that was like. I remember, you know, a very particular slice of that, and I think it was a very accurate depiction. And I think part of what doesn't date it is that it's an alternate universe. I think the you know, Nixon's fifth term, like, as soon as you get there, like, you know, this is sort, this is your world, but not quite. It's sort of like when you read an X-Men comic, and I think that's part of why X-Men comics are of their time, but not necessarily a dated thing, is because it's not quite the world that you are living in. It's, like, really close, but not exactly the same. So, you know, you may see bell bottoms, and you may see, you know, somebody roll through town in a pacer, but you're not looking at, like, you know, it, it doesn't feel like, oh, that's really cheesy and old and dated. It feels more like this is a, an accurate depiction of the time. And I think you have to do that really well in order to not end up being written off as a dated piece, whether it's a movie or a comic or anything else. If you don't do it properly, then it just feels like you kind of half-assed it, and then you don't, you know, and then, like, people will write it off as people.
Well, it's like it. A good, any good novel. I mean, P.G. Woodhouse, obviously set in the 20s, not dated at all. You know, Great Gatsby, not dated at all. So, I would certainly, you know, setting something in a specific time zone isn't necessarily going to date it. But, yeah, kind of like a mindless rehashing of whatever was cool at the time will date something. And I do think that, you know, the writing is definitely above that. It's not in any way a light skim through a culture of a time. It's definitely, you know, it's definitely a well-written piece. And I must say, I always liked the sort of the portrayal of superheroes in it. I mean, obviously we had, like, Dark Knight Returns, you know, angst Batman, and we've had angst Superman, and we've had sort of like what it means to be a superhero or a vigilante from the Batman thing, and then we had it from well, everyone really, I guess. I'm trying to think of the but Martial Law, I think, you know, that sort of thing, and I like that almost matter of fact handling of it, and the almost complete normalization of their place in the world was good, and obviously the, you know, contrasting that with the obvious out and out superheroics and powers of Dr. Manhattan compared to everything else.
I like the hook in that. That's part of, I think, why I'm the only person I know who really enjoyed The Incredibles, because it was sort of about, like, the real life story of a superhero, you know, air quote real life. And that's the part of Incredibles that I liked, was how everybody sort of ended up going underground, and you know, you can't be a hero anymore because, you know, people sue for damage to buildings and all that. And I thought, for me, in my mind, I drew that in parallel. Like, this is sort of what Watchmen was about, was, like, what it's like to have a real life when you're a superhero, like, the rest of the time when we don't see them saving the world. And I thought that was kind of an interesting idea to
explore. And not actually to even be particularly superheroes.
Yeah.
Oh, what are you talking about? The Night Owl was fantastic.
Yeah, for validation, I loved The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Yay!
Incredibles is not just... Incredibles isn't the, like, the best or perfect Pixar movie. It's pretty much the perfect movie.
I mean, I liked it a lot.
If you don't even watch it as an animated children's movie, I think it is, in terms of the craft of movie making, it is second by second pitch perfect.
Yeah, that's not a children's movie, although it's a movie children can watch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's filled with, and I think that perhaps... You know, harking back to Paul's comment about Gibbons being, you know, pencil for hire, that is what the love of superheroes and things is what drives Incredibles. And I'm not sure. Do you think, Paul, that there seems to be very little love in the creation of Watchmen for me?
Well, no, the whole point of it was Alan Moore didn't like superheroes. I mean, he was actively always trying to agitate against the order of superheroes. I mean, the Watchmen is kind of like the American V for Vendetta is to us. It had a very similar sort of superhero fighting against the system type thing. And I loved the way that he was mucking about with it. I mean, I think what you were saying about and The Incredibles ties into it perfectly. If you can fly, why would you bother to walk? And that's the whole thing about, you know, Kill Bill or the end of Kill Bill Part 2, or The Incredibles of the Watchmen, is that you are taking not away the power, but the ability to use the power. And then you're saying to somebody, I know you can fly, but I want you to walk with us and get really bored. And there was, I remember when they relaunched, when Peter David relaunched X Factor the first time, and he had all of the characters go to a shrink and go into psychoanalysis about how they felt. And the person that was in charge of their team was saying, nope, I think they're a really good team, they're really screwed together. And when they were talking to the psychoanalyst and saying, I hate this, I hate being nice to people when I just want to punch them through a steel window or something. And there was Quicksilver saying, you know how irritated you feel in a queue when the queue is moving too slowly and you want to get past there, pay for your stuff and just go, and there's 50 people shuffling in front of you? That's how I feel all the time. And I thought that was Peter David being a brilliant writer and saying about Quicksilver something that I don't think anyone had ever said, which is, he's got a bad attitude, but if you were Quicksilver, you would have a bad attitude too. You wouldn't run everywhere. You'd be slowed down by all the people with shopping bags in front of you. And when you go out Christmas shopping and you're walking up the high street and there's a million people all stopping in front of you with their shopping bags and you just want to kick them off the pavement and say, look, just don't stop for no reason, you idiot. That's how he felt. And that's how everyone in Watchmen felt.
Mm.
And I loved it. It humanised these characters. And the powers weren't anything to do with it. It was the fact that they were dealing with the powers in a human way. And that's what I loved about it.
It's similar in there are parallels, and I know it's not Alan Moore, it's Grant Morrison, and we'll go back to it a bit later on in the Zenith series, where they deal with the superpowers thing by having it tied into all the superheroes, their power tied into their biorhythm, so that they spend certain amounts of the time each month without any powers at all, and then some come back, and then when all of their biorhythms are synced up, then they all come back. So they get to live as normal and superheroes, which is quite cool. You know, you can't fly this week because my biorhythms are out. You'll have to wait till next week if you want the world saved. And I thought that was an interesting take on it as well.
But there can't be any drama unless there's you have to have drama to have a fight. I mean, Superman's ridiculous because you can't beat him. So you end up with these stupid things to
everything's made make it tonight. Dramatic.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I have a comic in the garage that disagrees with you, mister. I was actually just talking to my brother about that the other day. My brother, the comic nerd who started all this for me, when he worked in a comic shop, there was it was when Superman died, and I bought like the super pack of like the 8 issues and the funeral, and it's got like the front page of the Daily Planet in it, and it's all sealed, and I still have that out in my comic box, which is somewhere in the garage that I can't find at the moment. But I have one where Superman's dead, the funeral and everything.
Yeah, and how long did that last?
I don't know.
You know, that actually bothers me a lot. Because when DC decided Superman died but wasn't dead, they opened up the floodgates to kill and re-kill characters just all the time. And so when I see ads for the death of whoever coming up, I'm like, yeah, whatever. Mm. They've totally ruined that, because the significance of taking a character and killing them is gone.
Mm.
But well,
you're going to love the next X-Men movie then, aren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff.
But I mean, was that DC?
Because they kill and re-kill people? Yeah, you've never watched Days of Our Lives, have you, sweetie? Mm.
No.
They really need
to
bring...
that DC? Because I seem to remember X-Men... Xavier died every 12th issue or so. I mean, they'd always have the cover of, oh dear, Charles has died again, with a wheelchair with the wheel still spinning and Cyclops holding him with a blanket over him. And Xavier was like, he was just like, oh my god, you killed Xavier! You bleep bleep.
You bastard!
I didn't know if he'd use the word.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
Now I'm just picturing an X-Men version of Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, actually, I've got that, yeah.
And it's like the South Park... Okay, you need to draw me one now of South Park Xavier, because that cracks me up.
And Cyclops
too funny.
Would have to be Cartman, wouldn't he? I mean, it would just...
Wearing an orange... But you need to put Professor X in the orange coat with the hood.
Yeah.
Yes.
They really need to bring the American comic creators need to come over to the UK when we kill a comic hero, then he stays
dead.
They
stay dead, absolutely.
Yeah. Apart from Johnny Alpha, disappointingly.
But I didn't agree with Johnny Alpha dying. It was beautiful and it was so well done because it was drawn by Colin McNeil, who's a hell of an artist and better than Dave Gibbons in every single way. And it was really beautifully done.
But drawn by him because Esquerra refused to draw it, didn't he?
Yeah, true. Well, they had another guy before him, didn't they? The black and white artist.
Oh,
and I was trying to remember his name, Simon something, and it's going to bug me now. But I really liked that artwork as well. It was very grungy and mutant-y.
Yeah, was never a fan of that. I mean, but yeah, they were right back from, you know, it back in the day of Strontium Dog when they killed off, like, what's his name, Wolf, his assistant. He stayed. He was absolutely dead.
No, well, he came back as a zombie a couple of times.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But that is still dead, technically.
So now I feel like instead of having a letter to the editor section like a regular comic would have, we need to have Carl's this week's Better Than Dave Gibbons corner.
Every week he will say, from now until the end of time.
That's a crowded corner.
But this is an artist you should watch, and he's better than Dave Gibbons in every way.
Right, actually,
entertain me.
Right, this is also hideously awful and very one-sided. And to be fair, Dave Gibbons has probably spat his coffee out all over the laptop monitor at this point. But I was at a...
That means he's listening, and that would warm my heart.
Oh, I hope so. It was at a comics expo that I was at, and it was a 2000 AD panel. And I thought, I haven't read 2000 AD for a long time, because I felt that they priced themselves out of the market, which I think they have done. And there were Dave Gibbons, there was Brendan McCarthy, who I loved as an artist, and a few other guys. And I hung around just listening to the artist talk to the kids in the audience and some of the adults until there was only a couple of artists, Brendan McCarthy, Dave Gibbons, a writer whose name, Al Ewing, and two kids, and me, and literally that was it. And these two kids were so nervous, and they went up to Dave Gibbons and he said, would you mind signing this comic? And there was nobody there except for me who could have said anything. And he said, nope, sorry, I can only do it on my table, I'm contracted. And the kids went away so miserable, and I thought, I didn't like you beforehand. I really don't like you now. Because if he turned around and said, look, can you keep a secret? Because I want to do this, and, you know, somebody...
What's the worst that can happen?
What are they going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, it irritated the hell out of me. So, yeah. So the kids went away really sad, and I felt like saying, well, don't worry, John Higgins is better in every way. It's over on that table. Get him to sign something.
So John Higgins is this week's honorary member of the Better Than Dave Gibbons corner.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, DHM, do you remember a 2000 AD... Sorry, I'd ask all three of you, but I don't know if Jeff and Kelly would. But do you remember a 2000 AD Judge Dredd strip called The Exploding Man, and a guy called Ike Nobel walks back from the Cursed Earth to Megacity 1. Yes. Do you remember that one?
Yep, remember it.
That was fab, wasn't it?
I remember it as being fab. I remember some of the visuals of him radiating the energy and stuff were quite cool, but...
Yeah, John Higgins. Yeah. But it was a really touching story, because it was about a man who'd been blown up in a nuclear explosion, but had sucked in all the radiation and just wanted to walk home. And as he walked home, he just became more and more and more zombified and bits fell off and whatever. And he got back to Mega City 1. He was that close to being able to go home and just say, I've made it. And the judges just shot him. And it was a really, really affecting episode. And it's still one of my favourite 2000 AD strips of all time.
We're going to need to do the episode that's the 2000 AD primer for...
Yes. Well, luckily,
people like
for me and Kelly,
Jeff and I, who have no idea what's happening, and like when you say 2000 AD, I go, they made a Sylvester Stallone movie out of that, didn't they? And that's like the extent of my
a bit of it. But luckily, because it's an anthology comic, you don't really have to be, you know, into 2000 AD. You can pick, you know, a strip like Dread, which is in pretty much everything. But there's been so many books and things that have come in and out of 2000 AD that aren't, you know, in any other world would be separate from the comic entirely. I mean, it's just it's basically just a convenient way of putting everything together every week in one place more than it. I mean, is it indifferent to, like, obviously with X-Men or Superman, you have, or Spider-Man, you have the book, and it has the, and the book contains this week's episode, mm-hmm. and you read it and you wait for the next one, because there's like 6-7 stories in 2000 AD every week. You know, you're in and out, and you might hate this, or like Nicola Dante, which I never got on with. You might hate, you know, Love Dread or Rogue Trooper or stuff. But once the strip's finished, you know, it then has a second life as a collected entity.
Okay.
Unless
we need to get into that one week.
Yeah.
But for now, we need to spend some time, I think, on the Watchmen film.
Before we do film, can we say where we stand on the before Watchmen?
I haven't read it.
I've been afraid to start before Watchmen for two reasons. First being, I'm afraid I won't like it. The second being, I'm afraid I will like it and have to buy everything.
I haven't started because I wasn't a big fan of Muppet Babies, and I don't think it's going to...
fair enough.
That's all I got.
Comment section closed.
That's all I have. That's why I didn't start it. I feel like I want to like it, and I feel like it's going to end up being the Phantom Menace for me. I want it to be better than it is. And I feel like there's a certain amount of stuff that all lined up to make Watchmen possible and interesting. And I don't know that I necessarily feel the same way about before Watchmen. So
apparently Alan Moore doesn't like it.
Really?
Well, Alan Moore doesn't like anything.
And it takes so much to upset him. What do they do?
I don't think maybe they just stamped all over his baby. I mean, I do
feel like that a little bit.
The only take I have on it is that I was showing some of the artwork to a friend of mine who's not particularly into comics, and she, in fact, one of her stances is like, oh, she hates the way that women are portrayed in comics and things. And she was saying, well, I can kind of cope with X-Men. I can see there it's reasonable, you know, they're not completely superhero-ified things. And then you look at images of, like, of Silk Spectre and things from before Watchmen, and she's like, right, I'm done with that. That's a comic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And I will say that the thing that I didn't like about the film is Silk Spectre. It was her performance. Like, what I wanted to watch was the Rorschach and Night Owl show. Like, I could have watched those two all day. Like, give me, like, a separate web series, give me a graphic novel, give me a one-shot, like, I don't care. But those two doing whatever in hell it was that they were doing, like, I could watch that all the time. Mm. And then we add her, and it was her performance, it was partly her character, but it was mostly her performance that just drove me up a wall. That being said, I think that as an establishing piece of information, the opening credits of Watchmen is one of my favorite opening sequences of any movie ever, because I loved how they showed the evolution and showed this is the world that you were familiar with but not quite, and the way that they did that I thought was stupendous. I absolutely loved it. And then you get into the movie and it was kind of a bummer. I will always have a soft spot in my heart for this movie because I went to it with my friend Cammie, and we went to an IMAX theater, and we got there early, and so we stood there for, it was like opening weekend, we stood there for like 45 minutes waiting in line to get into the theater, continuing to tell people no, our boyfriends aren't coming, and the two girls were in fact there to see Watchmen. And then we got in and we sat down, and Cammie said, because we ended up having to sit kind of close and sort of watched like this the whole time, and Cammie said, we're going to get such a headache from sitting this close. It's going to be so awesome. And that was the moment we were friends forever. And so, for me personally, I will always have a soft spot for that. But, like, I watched, I bought the director's cut and watched some of the pirate stuff. And
oh, good, because I was going to ask you about the director's cut.
And it's neat. I'm glad they didn't put it in the film because I don't think it would have added anything, and I think it would have just confused a lot of people who were going for a good movie's sake. So that's my bit about Watchmen. So, Jeff, how about you? As a super duper fan of the comic book, which we've established.
All right. This will surprise you. I loved the movie.
Okay.
I absolutely loved the movie.
What?
But I know for people completely who different reasons than I absolutely loved the comic series. I think they're both done really well. And in the movie, they had to make certain changes to fit in the constraints of making a movie. And I did have a little bit of trouble at the end with the major ending change. But I get why they did it, because it fits for what they had to do to make the movie work. Not having any of the pirate stuff in totally made sense. Mm-hmm. And I agree, the Silk Spectre performance was flat. Although she does know how to do a sex scene. Booyah.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's not flat, which we found out in the film.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Was that an IMAX scene?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, yeah.
All of the more. Yeah.
So, Paul, apparently you have a slight problem with the ending.
I've got a problem with everything. Right, first off, you wasted your money on the IMAX, right? Right. How long we got? Right. You wasted your money on the IMAX for a headache, because any Zack Snyder film gives you a headache. It doesn't matter if it's in IMAX or not. He's an ADHD filmmaking menace, and basically he should be shot with Temazepam or something to slow him down before he starts making a film every single time. He walks on set, the assistant director shoots him in the backside with Prozac and says, come on, you can do this, Zack. More than 3 seconds for a cut. Chill out, man. So that's the first problem. The second thing is, you can't count the introductory sequence, because that wasn't done by them. It was done by a company called You & Co, who make film credits. And they are fabulous. They've got some really nice stuff under their belts. And they've got it on their showreel as saying, directed by Zack Snyder, but I refuse to believe it. I think he gave it to them and said, make this work, because all the cuts are longer than 3 seconds, and Zack can't count higher than 3 seconds for a cut.
Also,
he films on special cameras that have only got short little bits of film.
The opening montage is much cleverer than any other part of the film.
Done by Yuriko, not done by Zack Snyder.
That opening is just brilliant.
And the Dylan's track, just brilliant.
And it's cool, and it's fab. Although, the only thing I don't like about it is, it is unsubtle as what's it, the entire opening. I like it, and I love it. It's my favourite part of the whole film. But the bit where they actually show the comedian shooting JFK with the comedian badge on with the cigar is so stupid. I mean, it irritates me, and I love that sequence so much. But it's like going, yeah, because you're going to kill the president and be there with a great big smiley face badge which you wear for the rest of the film, well, the beginning of the film, for the rest of your life. That's not at all stupid, really, is it?
No.
That is a bit ham-fisted, yeah.
So I did, although I love...
It's
but I love
the
beginning there, where you've got the Night Owl. You know, in the first shot of that opening sequence, you've got Night Owl hitting somebody with a gun? Behind it, you got Bruce Wayne's parents and Bruce Wayne, and you got the Batman posters, and the thing they've gone to see is the Bat. And I think that's fabulous, the fact that Night Owl stopped Batman from happening because he saved Bruce Wayne's parents in one scene in a film.
Yeah.
I think that's just lovely. And as soon as I saw that, didn't see it the first time, the second or third time I watched the film, I saw that and loved it. But my main problem is with the ending. Well, through the whole film, I think the acting is pretty corny.
But I do think that they've a lot of that is referring, because Zack Snyder did say they've almost made a frame by frame. You know, the shots are framed, as the strip. I mean, he's basically taken the comic book and remade it frame by frame.
Yeah, there are points where you could take a frame from the comic, hold it up to the screen, and it's the same.
Yeah.
I mean, whether that works in a cinematographic sort of.
That doesn't necessarily make for a good movie, but
true.
Yeah,
but for people who think it didn't follow, like that's you know, he did. I know in one of the interviews on the DVD, he does hold up like a really abused copy and say, "This is our shooting script." So I did like that he did feel like the material was the most important piece, and that he wanted to make sure that the parts that they were telling properly.
I did feel there was more perhaps more love for the comic book in the making of the film than there was in the making of the comic book by the creators.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
It's
oh, just, I can totally see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's but I don't. To it.
I know there's a lot of love, but I don't know that there's any understanding whatsoever. So I mean, forget the ending for the moment. We'll come on. I'm sure we'll come on to the ending in soon. But the thing that irritates me is there are so many things where I've read the comic and understood it one way, and I got to the film and it was the polar opposite of it. So, for example, I mean, I'd be interested to know what you think, but the bit where Rorschach goes into prison, he says, mask taken away. In my reading of the comic, he's almost catatonic without his mask. And he walks through the place and he's just acting on impulse. He's like a zombie. Without the mask, he's nothing. He's back to being this damaged Walter Kovacs, abused and beaten, and he can't really function socially. He is the kid on the end of the line who doesn't understand the rest of the kids. And that's what I got from the comic. In the film, he turns into Clint Eastwood and he's Dirty Harry in the thing. He's jumping around the place, slicing people's faces off and whatever, going, you're all in here with me. And I go, no, but the comic is clever, you see, because the comic, he's the kid. He's still the damaged kid. Put the mask on and he becomes a superhero. But you take the mask off and he's Walter Kovacs again. You don't understand what he's like.
Yeah, I wish that he had been portrayed. Okay, the whole prison arc in the story, I have issues with stuff through the whole movie, just to be clear.
Mm.
But I still loved it. I didn't like how they changed the way they dealt with his mask being taken away and how he got it back. I didn't like how they didn't have time to show Walter as this distinctly different persona from Rorschach. And what I liked in the comic is that, yes, you get to see that Walter is this very, very different person from Rorschach. But when something goes down where Walter is now in danger, Rorschach comes out and protects him.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that.
And they don't have time to show that in the movie, unfortunately. So what we see is this very badass character just in the scenes where Rorschach has to come out to protect Walter, and we don't get the other part where we're seeing the damaged Walter.
I agree in as much as I can see it from that point of view. But I don't think that there wasn't the space to do that, because the Walter Kovacs kid has a very specific look and looked really, you know, lost and bewildered. And I felt you could have quite easily had him lost and bewildered at times. And I think, basically, Zack Snyder is a dial-the-amps-up-to-11 director, and subtlety, well, no, that's for pussies and UK kids. The whole thing about Watchmen is there is a subtle arc through the whole thing. I mean, Watchmen is Hobson's choice with superheroes. And that's why I dislike so much of the film, because there is no mark of subtlety, you know, writ large in the ending. But you've got Alan Moore, who's written this very thoughtful thing, and, you know, okay, he took the squid out. You can argue about the squid. It didn't bother me, he took the squid out. The squid was symptomatic of the fact that he liked various bits of it. He liked the bits that were cool, and the bits he'd understood, he put in other bits that he thought were as cool, and they weren't, because you lost the tempo.
So, in summation, Jeff, is it, do you reckon, Watchmen, is it the apogee of graphic novels for you, or is there, do you have like a one above, or?
The Watchmen graphic novel is it's the standard that all others are compared to. Some can be better. Everything else, though, is worse. As far as what I would say is better today, I don't know. But there are other things that are like what my pick will be for this week. I put right up there with Watchmen. But it's a completely different feel, and it takes a very different look at these types of characters. So it's for me, it's a tough act for anyone else to beat.
Mm.
Paul, you agree?
I don't think there's anything else by Alan Moore that I like more. And Alan Moore is my favourite comic book writer. So, yeah, I mean, I if I had to pick anything artistically, I'd go for something by Dave McKean. If I had to pick a comic work, I'd go for Cerebus. But I think Watchmen is the archetypal read this graphic novel first. This w- but the problem is, if you show somebody Watchmen first, then, oh boy, the only way is really down. It's quite hard to say, read Watchmen, and then there's a whole world of not quite as good out there for you to come into. So it's a bit of a shame in that way, but Watchmen is an encapsulated piece of beauty that I love to pieces.
I like how you said that, an encapsulated piece of beauty. That nails it right there.
Just not visually.
Well, okay, you have to look at the whole package. And if you break it apart into individual pieces, you can find other things, other places that are better than the individual pieces. When you put it all together, though, it becomes more than those pieces.
Yeah. Watchmen at the time, I remember going to a comic shop when Watchmen was coming out, and I wasn't mature enough to like Watchmen when it came out. And I was picking the comics up, I was leafing through them. They looked interesting, but not brilliant to me. It was getting the collector's edition and suddenly finding out what I'd missed. That is the thing to me, which is why the film is so heartbreaking. There are only two films that upset me and irritate me more than Watchmen. Actually, possibly only one, thinking about it. And the end of Watchmen is just disastrous.
Kelly?
What are the other two? Now I want to know, what are the other two?
Yeah,
I
Prometheus. Know. Prometheus. Oh,
which I never
hate.
Saw.
Well, you should... I'll tell you what.
Wow.
If Prometheus is basically Ridley Scott's love letter to the fact that everyone in the future is stupid. And that even if you get the most brilliant scientists on a spaceship, they're all stupid. And they all make stupid choices. And it is... I was listening to a podcast review of Star Trek the other day, and the people talking about it were saying that they loved the film... And they really enjoyed it, and they came out buzzing. But at any point, if anyone said, yeah, but what about this bit in the story, then it all broke to pieces. Because Star Trek, the new one, Into Darkness, is a fabulous film if you disregard the script and the plot. Because it's an utter conveyance of idiocy on the screen. And it upsets me more than anything else that a Hollywood film can spend so much... on the visuals, on the 3D, on the script, on the actors' Winnebagos, on the donuts for the actors, on the special sort of salami that Michael Fassbender likes over any other that they had to ship in from Turkey, or whatever. But they can't sort out a script over and above. They get Damon flipping Lindelof to come in to write half a dozen words with zany, zany, awesome, cool, 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 zany, awesome, all the way through the film. And yet, actually, it doesn't matter that it makes no sense.
Well, but that's the modern way, isn't it? That's the J.J. Abrams way, anyway.
A script used to be important.
It's like,
it's confection, and that makes me sad.
Yeah. So, what's your summation of Watchmen, then, Kelly? Are you? Is it?
I do think it is greater than the sum of its parts, and that people who don't read comic books should make an exception. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that. You guys are correct about, you know, from there, like, where do you go? It's kind of down. But I do also think that other things that everybody that I talk to who likes Watchmen likes it for a different reason. So there's a certain thing about it that Jeff really likes. There's a certain thing about it that I really like. There's, like, whoever you talk to, it's, and I know how dumb this sounds, but it's sort of like a Rorschach test. Like, the thing that resonates with each person is a little different. You know, for what they get out of it, no matter who they are. And so to me, that's the thing that's interesting about reading it. And I think that you can go from there, because you can find somebody who goes, I didn't really like this art, you know, it left me flat. So, okay, well, you know, if you really like the story, you know, you should go check out some other Alan Moore titles because that's the thing for you. Or if somebody goes, gosh, this story was dark and terrible, then you go, maybe Alan Moore is not necessarily the guy that you want to be reading. And, you know, at least it gives you like a starting point. If somebody's like, I'm kind of interested in comic books, you know, you read them all the time, I want to find out more. This is sort of a good litmus test for people to tell. And then, like, you know, if they say that they're in love with the art, then Carl knows never to speak with them again.
I mean, I think that you know, as someone that is, I think, almost exactly in the middle meh thing of it, I mean, it's not the greatest drawn thing. You know, Dave Gibbons is not the greatest artist, and it's not Alan Moore's finest hour. I mean, because obviously he's created Halo Jones, so anything from that is down. I mean, V for Vendetta is better, I think, than Watchmen. But Halo Jones is infinitely better, and of course Halo Jones is drawn by Ian Gibson, which, you know, he's definitely not a hack for hire. So yeah, I'm failing at being polarised. I know, it's like, it's difficult to come up with a summation of something where you go, whoa, yeah, it's a comic book.
Did you like the end of the film?
I did, actually, yes. And you know what, I did like the film, and I probably engaged with the film more than the comic book.
Well, the art's different, at least.
Anyway, the other thing I wanted to have a quick squiz through before we run out of time was what seems to be like the biggest comic news on the UK side this week was Rebellion's decision to reissue Zenith on free order, pre-order from the 1st of July for only £100. Approximately like the
bargain.
Bargain. You know what? I'm still buying it.
Are you?
Buying it. I don't know why, because once you bought it, once you've paid £100 for a comic book, I'm only printing 1,000 of them, so, you know, and I know what's going to happen. We're going to buy it, and it's going to come out in e-book or digital format in 6 months' time. It just is.
For £7.
Yeah. And it's like the Madonna... Do you remember the Madonna sex book from the 80s?
Don't remember it that well, no.
Did it get hot in here?
But what I liked most about that book, and I think the Zenith thing's going to be the same thing, is that it's brilliant because it's got all this like sexy imagery of Madonna in it. But if you buy it, you can't open it and see that, because by opening it, you will destroy all its value. It's like, brilliant! In fact, 90% of them are probably blank.
No, they weren't.
No, they're not blank.
It turns out...
that if you buy two copies...
that Jeff has read all of them. What?
As it turns out, the library that was near me had a copy. So you could check it out.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to worry about destroying the value of the book because it was the library's copy.
Yeah. And what section were you in there, Jeff? Were you in the smut section of the library?
Wow, I suddenly have a bad connection.
Huh. See, I think, to my mind, I think that that Zenith is a better superhero story than Watchmen, and I think Grant Morrison's writing in it is better than Alan Moore's writing, and Steve Yeol's art is...
Oh yeah, blimey, definitely. Yeah.
I think if you wanted a primer, Kelly, I would definitely hit eBay and get hold of Zenith phases 1-4, because it's a love story to superhero comics.
I hate to say it, probably cheaper to buy the collected hardback. I mean, they're not easy to buy, those ones.
Yeah, it is, actually, probably, because it's, yeah. I mean, I think people are saying £100, what a complete rip-off. But, yeah, you're going to spend 50, 60 quid on each used edition on eBay. So you're going to be in for, like, double that just to buy it separately used. So you might as well spring for the 100 quid. I know I'm going to be up at midnight on the 1st of July with the buy button clicking away. But
I'll just borrow yours. That's not a problem.
No. Just don't crease the spine.
Yeah, you can scan in all the pages.
There you go. And breaking spines, that is a cardinal sin.
Yeah, just ask Bane.
That's what I was just thinking.
So
you guys see the absolute Sandman that I have checked out from the library right now. It's cool.
Is it used?
It's well used.
See, I mean, that's like Neil Gaiman. On a good day, Neil Gaiman will outright.
Oh, I use my out loud voice again.
You did. It's your outside voice.
Actually, I'll tell you what, I'm with Happy Man. I think I am tempted to buy the hardback of Zenith. Partially because it was so good. And I remember Zenith up to the end of, I think it's phase 3, where you had all the old classic UK characters come back in.
And Archie came back.
And Archie came back, and the Red Hand, and the Red Glove and stuff.
Yeah.
Steel Hand. And that was really cool. But I don't remember any of the phases afterwards. I think that's when I dropped off from 2000 AD.
Right.
So I really want to come back to it.
Definitely worth it. Definitely. It's a long game. It's spread nicely out over 4 books.
Yeah.
So if we to round off, have we all got something super cool for this week?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. And what have you got for us then, Mr. Jeff?
All right. My selection this week is another series that was eventually bound together as a graphic novel, and it's called Wanted. So I'm bringing it up on my iPad. There you go. That's
That looks.
Yeah. So
it's nice,
so
cheerful, it's like happy reading.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So it's. I hate to compare it to Watchmen because that's, you know, it's like when someone says, oh, if you liked the movie Rocky Horror Picture Show, you'll love this movie. And then it's like zombie snowmen from Mars or something. And you're like, no, I don't even understand why you would make the comparison. But it's like Watchmen in that you have kind of an alternate world similar to ours, but different enough. And you're focusing on the lives of your super characters, and in this case they happen to be the villains as opposed to the heroes. And so this is a like a post superhero world where the bad guys all ganged up and managed to eliminate the superheroes, and they now run the whole show. And it's the interaction between the people that are key in some way to how this world now runs. And it's I think a very well written story. I really enjoy the art in it as well. And it was just a really fun read. It is dark, and it is not at all like the movie that was made. There was a movie that was made. I think Angelina Jolie was in it. And apparently what it shares in common with the comic book is the title.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I never even saw the movie because I had so many people that like me were excited about it. And then they went and saw it and came back and said, don't. Just don't. Mm-hmm. Not even if it's for a dollar at Redbox. Don't.
Kelly, you're leafing through something frantically there, see?
Yeah, I'm looking for like a good shot of art that I can show you from my pick. So that's what I'm trying to do. So my pick is actually it's also a bound collection. And I'm choosing the bound collection so that you get a bunch of it at once because I think it's a lot of fun to read. And it's a series called Stumptown, which is about the place I live. And it's Portland, Oregon, and it's by Greg Rucka and Matthew Southworth. And it's a story about a detective agency, a detective specifically, and she runs Stumptown Investigations. Yes, I said she. It's a comic book where the main character is a girl, which is not the thing I like about it. It's just sort of a bonus, and she's sort of a regular-looking person. I'm going to show you guys one shot of one of the pages, and the reason I like this is because this is an actual bridge here in Portland. It's the St. John's Bridge, and it looks like that, which I think is very cool. And it's set in Portland, and you hear people talk about different parts of town in it, which is kind of a bonus if you live here or have been here. You can kind of like, it's like when you watch a movie that was filmed someplace You know, like, every time I watch Goonies, like, getting to go, I've been there. You know, it's that sort of thing. So this is the suggestion I have is Stumptown Volume 1. Jeff said that it's on Comixology.
It is.
It's available digitally, so if you want to check it out, you can. It's from Oni Press, and Greg Rucka and Matthew Southworth are lovely people, and the comic's really interesting, and it's...
Okay, bye!
I do really like the art. I do like the art better than Watchmen, and I feel like it's a story. I feel like I have to qualify everything with that now. I like the art better than I like the art in Watchmen. Thanks, Carl! But I feel like it's another one where it's a good story, and if you like the art, that's fine. But if you don't like the art, you'll probably still enjoy reading it.
Just from the bits you've shown us, it's definitely, I'm going to be grabbing that. I think it looks great. I'm expecting it to be a bit like an American version of the number one ladies detective agency then.
No.
No.
No. One of the things that I like about it is that it's not... Like, some comics can be like, hey, look at me, I'm the girl, and I'm the center of the comic book. And it just happens that the main character is female. And so it's not treated like it's a big deal. And I really like that. That has a certain amount of appeal to me. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. And it was recommended to me by my local comic shop guy. His name is Michael. And it's Michael at Bridge City Comics. I'm going to give him a shout out because he's awesome. And I went in and I said, "What you got? I'm looking for something new to read." There was a few years ago. I said, "What you got? That's like cool that I haven't read." And he said, "Stumptown. You need it. I have one. You should totally read it. And I promise you will enjoy it."
And so that's why comic shop guys are cool, because they know this stuff. Yes, Mr. Paul.
I was going to do the front cover of Daredevil by Chris Samnee, because it's got Daredevil running across a washing line and the washing spells out the word Daredevil, and it's so beautifully done. But Marvel made me really cross because they stuck all their logos all over it, whereas they should have gone with the artwork. I'm going to go for Chew, which is a comic by Image Comics. It's a very funny comic, and you don't get humour. I know Wanted by Mark Miller has got a lot of black comedy within it, but it's not funny. It hasn't got a humorous situation for a start. But Chew was fabulous because it is just laugh out loud funny throughout, and I've been reading it since the first issue and loving it. The artwork is brilliant by a guy called Rob Guillory. Well, I hope I said it right, actually. And it's written by a guy called John Layman, and he just layers in so much cleverness. And it's now up to issue 32, 33 or so. And the last collected edition, called Space Cakes, is possibly my favourite four issues of comics, one after the other, leading to an absolute hammer blow of plot at the end that I can't think of anything where I've been so affected by one panel of comic at all, ever, in the entire time that I've been reading comics. Space Cakes, I mean, you don't have to read the whole of it up to that point. You can probably read the first issue and then 28 to 30, I think it was. But it just deals with these beautiful characters so well. They are so well crafted. They are so well done. There's a love story that never quite gets to where you think it's going to get to, but is so beautifully done. The female characters are as brilliantly done as I can think of any female character in a comic book, because Kelly's right, I mean, they're often so badly done, and you know, they all suffer from Psylocke syndrome, where they're just rubbish characters. But Tony Chu, the female character in the comic, has one panel which would just affect you for the rest of your life, I think. And it is I love so many comics, but Chew, Space Cakes, is just epochal in terms of a story that has a beginning, middle, and the end will stay with you forever.
You know, you're not the first person I've heard rave about Chew.
Okay.
And I'm checking now, and it is
on Comixology. Oh, yeah.
Yes,
it's on Comixology.
That's where I'm looking right now.
There's a company that's getting
an extremely... Space Cakes on Comixology right now, the whole thing, for $8.99.
Ooh.
I tell you what, though, it is funny, and it's laugh-out-loud funny a lot of the time. There's one point where you will not be laughing, and you will be very sad. So if you sort of like saying, but I didn't laugh, that's not what I'm saying. It is a funny situation. It's a funny world that it's all set in, but there are moments of utter comedy, and there are moments of high, high drama. And Chew does balances it so well. And the art's better than Watchmen.
Well, on my pick, the art is also better than Watchmen. But this is mine's a weird one in that it was, I think it was the first time that 2000 AD had ever printed a strip that originated elsewhere. I think they've done it since, but it was the first time that they took a part work that was American in origin and printed it. Even though it was created by two Brits, Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill, and I still remember the artwork to this day because I thought that's one of the reasons that I switched from thinking Kevin O'Neill was rubbish to realising that Kevin O'Neill was just a complete god. And it was created in 1986, and it's the graphic novel strip Metalzoic, which is bonkers mad insane. It does have a story, but, you know, it doesn't really have a story. It's a futuristic planet Earth where all human life has been wiped out because the magnetic fields of the Earth have changed and only robots can survive. And the robots have turned into, like, tribes of dinosaurs and proto-people. And one of the hero of the strip, which is a psychotic gorilla robot, who is operated on his own brain to make himself more violent. So there's no subtext to this strip, but I do remember reading it every week and just waiting.
Zack Snyder would love it.
Yes, it would make a brilliant movie for about 30 seconds. But
actually, the funny parallel is Zack Snyder also operated on his own brain to make his cuts more fluid and dynamic. It just didn't work.
I would watch this and I would want to read, but couldn't wait for the next week's edition to come out, purely because I just wanted to see what Kevin O'Neill would draw next, how much more mental he would make the next battle scene or the next robots and things. And every week it just got more and more and more mental until the end. And it's not great art. Didn't change the future of anything. It didn't convert anyone to anything, and no emotions were harmed in the making of this strip. But awesomeness was achieved, certainly by Kevin O'Neill. I think that the man is the god of the dip pen and detailed line. So, Metalzoic. It was DC Comics originally. It was the first graphic novel that DC Comics ever published.
Really?
Okay, yeah.
Do you know what, at DHM, I was convinced, when you said it was one of the first strips that 2000 AD did, even though it wasn't their property, I was convinced you were going to go back to the beginning when they redid Dare and they updated him and he had a metal glove and it was awful. Do you remember that?
Well, that wasn't the original Dare. They did it before.
It was still Dan Dare.
No. They shat all over Dan Dare previously to that.
Okay, I was convinced that was what you were going to do. I was really surprised.
But they rejiggered him in the roundabout.
Well, they turned him into an American space age fighty guy with a steel glove, didn't they?
No, before that they reorganised him and he was like an Americanised space age hero with a huge flying space fortress, which looked a bit like the Millennium Falcon with extra guns. And they kind of turned him into Han Solo.
Yeah, it wasn't 2000 AD's finest hour.
It wasn't, no. But it was good compared to the re-relaunch of him that they did later with the metal glove. Dave Gibbons was responsible for all of that as well.
It was him doing the artwork, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realise it was not good, was it?
No. So purge your mind of Dave Gibbons.
Better artwork than Watchmen?
Sorry?
Is the artwork better than Watchmen?
In what?
It's
in Dan
as
Dare?
Good as.
In your pick.
In my pick? Damn right it is.
Oh, yeah.
So, I guess after an hour and 30 minutes, Jeff, you're going to Comic-Con later today, aren't you?
Yes, Denver Comic-Con starts today and runs for 3 days. So I will be there all 3 days. and there are a few artists that I know there that I'm looking forward to getting to catch up with, and I'm hoping to get to meet some cool new people as well.
Excellent. So next week's thing will be about the Comic-Con mostly a lot then.
Yeah, we can do that, yes.
Fantastic. Yeah, brilliant. So, and you've got a 3-day pass. You've got understanding family.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I've got a 3-day pass.
It'll come back to haunt you. Don't worry.
Everything comes back to haunt me. I just hope the artwork is good.
Hopefully you won't run across Dave Gibbons.
Yeah.
Look, it's Dave Gibbons.
I was wondering, I'm just looking up now to see if he's there. Give him a signed copy of this show.
Yeah, I could totally do that.
Cool.
So, Zuli's there. Michael Zuli, he's a hell of an artist. You know he's better than...
Yeah, I do.
Oh, I know this one.
And on that note, I think it's time to quickly point out on Ewan's behalf that UK2 are going to be picking up the tab for this hour and a bit of nonsense.
Yes.
Bless them and their internet bandwidth socks. Thank you, UK2.net. Perhaps I think Ewan can he's probably got a bit he can drop into this or just let us go with it. But www.uk2.net, internet services, buy your domains from them, host your domains with them, build your websites with them, apparently, with the website builder. Most of all, go and visit them, because they do hand over great gobs of bandwidth to Ewan and he uses all of it. So God bless the good ship UK2.net and all who sail in her. Hmm. Even my dog loves them. She's barking away like mad. So, quick round. Where's everyone on the internet? When my dog's finished, can you hear her?
Yes. She sounds really excited to be here.
Yeah,
she totally is.
She draws better than Dave Gibbons, apparently.
Well, don't we all?
Kelly?
Maybe not me, but only maybe. You can find me on Twitter and on app.net as Verso. And you can find me on the unofficial Apple weblog to Topcast. Sometimes I'm on Angry Mac Bastards, and sometimes right here on the British Tech Network, you can hear me shoot my mouth off on the Mac show.
Splendid. Mr. Jeff?
All right. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at Mac Observer. So you can find me at macobserver.com. And you can find me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamet, both places. You can find me here on British Tech Network, on The Big Show, sometimes on The Mac Show. And apparently on... What are we called? The Comic Show?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
On The Comic Show. And you can also find me at Fresh Brewed Tales. That's where I talk about the weird stuff I see that happens in coffee shops.
Hello.
Whoops.
Did you disconnect?
I have no idea what happened just there.
I would like to point out I was not touching the keyboard at all.
Nope, and the cat was not there.
Right. I'm double checking. Nope, no cats around.
Kelly's there. Are you there, Kelly?
I am indeed. We've lost Paul entirely, though, it looks like.
Ah!
At least I don't see him.
Oh, dear.
No, I don't see her.
Let's pop him on there. How are we doing here? It's like Skype. It's sort of a mind of its own. Mind of its own.
Hello.
He's back. So we've got Kelly at Verso, etc. Jeff, we've done him. Paul, whereabouts are you?
I'm on the internet, so various places, Flickr, YouTube and so on, and Twitter, all under the name Kercal, K-E-R-C-A-L. And the website is kercal.co.uk.
Excellent. And I'm at Dr. Happy Mac on app.net and on the Twitters. I'm busy registering www.ihatedavegibbons.com as we speak.
No. Better art than Dave.
I'm better than davegibbons.com.
A gibbon would be better than Dave Gibbons.
and I'm mostly on the British Tech Mac show, which I guess will be later in the weekend this week. That's it. That's been the comic show. That's been Watchmen. And next week we'll be back with a big fat report from the Denver Comic Con.
Yes.
Excellent.
Well, I guess the pressure's on now.
Yeah.
I want an autograph from Temple Smith. Don't care which body part, but I want to see it on screen.
After a couple drinks, you may care which body part. Just saying.
Actually, Ben Temple Smith, I can imagine what he'd say.